I'm joined today by Annie Horgan. Good afternoon, Annie.
Hello.
And you do reenactments, don't you?
I do, yes.
Can you tell me what it is you reenact?
Personally, I currently reenact Edwardian period from 1911 through to 1919.
Now, when we say you reenact it, tell me what that involves, please.
Well, there's a difference. The reenactment is normally referred to for the battle reenactment, so where they actually reenact a battle such as Bosworth or Tewkesbury. We tend to now differentiate it by saying that it's living history or historical interpretation. Mm-hmm. So what I do is, I tend to call it historical interpretation, is I take on a persona of an Edwardian lady and research into her history, facts and figures and things about her life, mm-hmm. and then share that with members of the public.
Do you base your ladies on real people?
Yes.
So can you tell me who you've reenacted?
I have played Mary Cadbury from Cadbury's Chocolate.
Yummy.
Yes. And Mary MacArthur, who was a trade unionist and started the Women's Workers Guild and became a very close friend of Queen Mary.
Wow. So were you a bit of a women's libber?
Oh, yes, very much so. Mm. Very much so, yes. Yes. Trade unionist.
Okay. I'm intrigued. It sounds fascinating. I love the thought of this. How far do you go with your reenactments?
What do you mean, travel-wise? Or in-depth of the person?
Let's go with both.
Okay.
We'll start travel-wise.
Travel-wise, the furthest I have travelled in the past from Lincolnshire would be down to Bodiam Castle and Hurstmonceux down in Kent.
Right.
But that was many years ago when I was doing medieval reenactment, which I used to do with my husband and children, but I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
But how far do we go with the characterisation is we try to be as accurate as we possibly can, and we do an awful lot of research. We try and recreate clothing that they have worn from photographs, and we take actual written evidence of the characters and things, and we will show mm-hmm. these as part of the portrayal.
Okay. You say clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you start?
Well, most of it we make ourselves.
Yeah.
When we very first started, 18 years ago, when we were doing medieval, the ideal thing is that you have a whole hand-sewn garment, because you would have, back in those days, it would have had to have been hand-sewn. Yep. But, of course, there are a few people who will actually hand-sew a complete garment, but we would machine sew and only hand finish. So everything that would actually be on display would be, you know, hand finished.
Authentic,
mm. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So does that mean that we're not talking about you going into a shop and thinking, oh, that's good, that would work for being...
Not really, no. No, all of it is custom made.
So can you actually buy that sort of thing at all?
Not off the peg, but there are people who will produce for others. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm fortunate enough that I have the ability to sew myself.
Person.
Yes, I do.
Or a seamstress.
Yes,
that's a better way of putting
yes.
it.
Yes.
Excellent. So you're never short of clothing.
No, never short of clothing, and always fiddling and sewing. But as everybody will tell you in the reenactment world, that you'll have a big event coming up and maybe you've got a new costume to wear, and you can guarantee the night before you will be frantically trying to finish it.
Isn't that authentic and part of the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It most certainly is, yes.
Because surely, I mean, obviously TV wasn't a huge thing, was it? Wasn't even thought of, perhaps, in those days. So you would be doing genuine things like sewing, stitching, crochet, whatever.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I mean, I would take pieces to sew, you know, so I might make myself a new shift, which was the underclothing. You know, I might sit and sew one of those. So therefore you're getting your hand-sewn clothing that way as well.
Yeah. Tell me about some of your characters.
Mrs. Cadbury, she was a Quaker and social reformist, and they moved the factory from inner Birmingham out to Bourneville, where they built all the houses, and all of the houses had gardens and flushing toilets and running water.
Positively luxurious.
Exactly, exactly, because they were of the mind that you know, they needed to have good workforce. They needed to have a healthy lifestyle, and so they
paid off because Bourneville's still going.
Oh yes, yes, and they introduced schools. Within it, there were doctors, there were sports centres. And they were also of the mind that anybody could be within the management. And so anybody off the shop floor, as they came through, they would have a finishing school also, which they could go through into business school and be taught business. So then they could then go on, and the Cadburys would help finance those people to start their own businesses. Yeah.
Okay, I can see why that would be appealing, but why did you particularly pick Mary?
Why did I pick Mary Cadbury? Well, I wanted somebody who I could actually have a decent amount of research about was the thing, also she was a very similar age to me. At the period that we play, so she, when I very first played her, it was just before COVID, so what are we, like 3 years ago, and so in 1912, which was the year we were doing, she was 56, and 3 years ago I was 57, so it was a really good character to play that I could take on board and be her and tell her life story.
I mean, obviously she's not the only character you've played.
No, like I say, I have done Mrs. Miller, who is Agatha Christie's mother.
Oh, really?
Yes, because one of the things that we used to do was we used to do Lady Adventurers. Mm. And again, this was sort of like 1911, 1912. And we were looking to go on go out to Egypt.
Yeah.
Of course, Mrs. Miller had been before, so she she was having afternoon tea with the ladies to explain about some of the things that maybe they should take to go to Egypt and things. And my friend's young daughter played a young Agatha.
Excellent. That is Agatha Christie. Nobody has not heard of Agatha Christie.
Exactly. Yes.
And that must be a really... I mean, obviously, you've got lots to go on content-wise to build on.
Yeah.
But that must be quite a difficult part to play.
Well, it wasn't at the time because in 1911, Agatha was still a young girl.
Wasn't, no.
So she wasn't actually writing,
and
but
she
we
wasn't
linked...
actually Agatha Christie.
No, she was Agatha Miller. Yeah. but we just, you know, like to link it in, but... She had already been out to Egypt.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's, like I say, fascinating. And it's something that I am quite keen, maybe, well, no, perhaps not now, but I might have been keen to try back in the day.
I don't know. I think you could. I'm sure we could find you a character.
How much input would I have in that then? Or do you No.
It would be your choice.
Okay.
It would totally be your choice, but we could point you in the right directions of what would be suitable for you.
Okay. So if I rocked up and said, I really want to be Queen Mary, is that not going to go down well, or...?
Oh, no. It could do. But like I say, within our portrayal, we like to have a visual as well. So my friend who does play Queen Mary, she has several wigs and things like that. And she takes, she's looked at photographs of Queen Mary, and Julia is amazing. And she actually stands like her and everything. She's studied her really, really well.
Yeah.
If you wanted to play somebody of royal character, yes, you could. You could do it. And
just
you
to
go.
Clarify, I don't necessarily. I'm more the kind of below stairs type.
Yeah. You do. We could get you below stairs easily. We could have you being cook.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we could have you being cook, put a mob cap on you and a pinny.
Yeah, that's more my scene.
Yes. Yeah, we could easily do that for you. Or you could come and work in the YMCA as one of the well-wishing women of the village.
Ooh.
Giving out pots of tea to the young soldiers in World War One.
How many people do you actually get at a reenactment?
Well, it depends. Do you mean people doing the reenactment or public visiting?
Either. I didn't realise you did public visiting as well.
Oh, yes. That's the main thing. We actually do this to the public.
Mm.
So, Tewkesbury is a huge, huge event, and you can get maybe 1,000 men on the field fighting.
Wow.
Down to one we can do quite small ones as well, down to where there are maybe only 20 of us or something like that.
Okay.
Doing a particular storyline of something.
When you say you do a storyline, you obviously have set times and places that you have to be in or something like that. How do you go about choosing a storyline?
Well, you'll pick a year. When we were doing the Social Reform Ladies, which is Mary MacArthur and Mrs. Cadbury and things, we happened to be doing it on Derby weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing we started on the Friday, Saturday. Sunday was the actual day of the Derby, which was where...
You didn't go and throw yourself under any horses,
No.
Thank goodness
but
for that.
By the Monday, but we were saying, oh, we've heard people are going down to the Derby and they want to cause a bit of trouble.
Oh.
You see, but we didn't know the outcome until the Monday when we said, oh, shock horror, she's in hospital, she's, you know...
Yeah.
Because she didn't die straight away, she died a week later.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she died a week later. And at her funeral was the last time there was a big parade of the suffragettes.
Okay. How do we know this?
Again, through documentation.
Yeah.
But the suffragist movement started in 1860. And the suffragettes didn't do themselves any favours at all.
No.
Because in 1912, it was put to the Commons for the women to have the vote, and the Commons agreed it, but the House of Lords threw it out because if they are going to behave in such a way, so blowing up, ducal palaces, and setting bombs off, smashing windows,
being unladylike generally.
Well. but I mean, it's a little bit like the extremists of today, of you know, throwing paint in the galleries and things like that. They're not doing themselves any favours.
No.
So, so they the suffragettes actually lost women the vote.
Interesting. Mm. How do we go about joining you if we wanted to be a reenactmenter?
Well, if you want to, I mean, most people approach you at an event and say, oh, how do we get into it? Mm. Because, you know, we do all sorts of things. Like I say, I can do all the way from medieval through to World War One. So I've done Henrican, Elizabethan, Victorian, and then the Edwardian as well.
Okay.
And we also do a very niche group, which of German mercenaries called Landschnecks, and they were 15th century mercenaries and came over to this country for Henry VIII and the Cloth of Gold.
Gosh, didn't know that.
Mm. So, but very often people will come up to you as when you're at an event and say, oh, how do we get into this? How do we get into that? Mm. And I personally have my own personal insurance, but you can join groups such as there is the Medieval Siege Society, which we used to belong to. There is the Sealed Knot, and there are various societies where you play, where you pay membership and an insurance, and then you're covered by their insurance when you go to events. I personally have my own insurance too, so I can go wherever I want. I can work in schools, I can I can work at the local library, wherever they want me.
Different side of reenactment I hadn't considered. When you go into schools, what do you do?
Because I used to work in school, and they had been doing some Shakespeare, and so I went in as a little bit early because it was a wise woman, and really they had moved on a little bit from wise women by Tudor times. But I went in with all my potions and lotions and spoke to them all about the various things that happened in Tudor times for healthcare. And we've got one, me and my husband are doing one for our local primary school at the end of June. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to work on British values. And what we have come up with is we are going to do pirates.
Okay.
And how does that fit in with British values? Well, it's to do with inclusivity. Mm-hmm. And because, let's face it, they were a very mishmash of a people, weren't they, the pirates? But they all accepted them.
Yeah.
Different nationalities, different races. I mean, the disabilities of the chap with the, you know, with the wooden leg, the eye patch, all of those type of things. So we're approaching it from an inclusivity angle.
Yeah, that is very interesting and very topical. Mm. It seems to me that there isn't anything you can't do, really.
There isn't. You can do whatever. One of the places that I go to, it's a private manor house, they portray these various things. They used to do just Tudor, but they've branched out a little bit, and they do a Through the Ages. Mm. And there is a 70s family who are camping, and they have great fun. They really, really do. And they're all there in their lovely orange tents, and everything is orange and brown from the 70s, and lots of Tupperware and
lots of flares.
Yeah, lots of flares. Man at CNA. You know.
Lovely. Oh, it's taking me back. When you start out and you pick your scenario or your scene, do you go for historical events and think we're going to reenact that this year or today or whenever?
Well, a lot of it depends. Again, depending on the period that you're doing, because when we portray medieval, we will just talk about the general history.
Yeah.
We don't particularly take on characters from that, but we'll explain, you know, the food that they ate and, you know, and obviously all the chaps all get out the swords and, you know, all the armour and do all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then there's the crafts as well. I can do tablet weaving. My daughter has done pewter casting. My son has done stained glass window, you know, stained glass.
Mm-hmm.
People bring along ferrets because they would have kept ferrets and all of those type of things. So you've got that end, and then you've got to the one where you can actually research people. And so, like I say, with the one that we did on Derby Day, we said, oh, so it's Derby Day, so that's what we can bring that in alongside all the general history. We can say, oh yes, the suffragettes are going, you know, bring a bit of excitement into it.
Okay. You said you do lots of research. How far does that go? I mean, if you are on a reenactment weekend for, I don't know, medieval period, say.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they didn't have portaloos in the medieval period. How far does it go?
No, we do have portaloos that we will, and they're normally segregated from the public, or you have an area where the reenactors will go. But yeah, it's things like no glasses, no modern shoes, no phones. My husband and I, we both used to wear wristwatches before we started reenactment. But you get a tan line, so you know, and you can take it as far as you want, is the thing, the authenticity. But food, we always try and stick with authentic food that would have been eaten at the time. So in medieval times, there's no potatoes, there's no tomatoes. There is short grain rice because we haven't got long grain rice yet.
Mm.
We have got pasta. But as what we would now call ravioli.
Yeah.
That's how you would have had pasta.
Okay. So do you actually go in for all the cooking as well?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, I love cooking. In fact, that is one of my main roles that I get to. When we're doing the big group reenactment, I will offer to run the kitchen.
Yeah.
So, it's good fun. Especially when, you know, like if you've got a group of 20 of you and you might have a couple of vegans and you might have somebody who's allergic to something and allergic to something else, or, you know, so it's quite fun juggling a menu to accommodate everybody.
Especially as they probably wouldn't have done that or known about.
No, they wouldn't. No, no, they wouldn't have done.
I can see that would be quite a trial, actually.
What to do at an event,
to juggle.
Well, but it's just all part and parcel of it. You know, it's just like, you know, you just get into that research and go, oh, actually, yeah, that's, look at that dinner. Yeah, that's completely vegan anyway. So, and that's what they would have been eating, you know, irrelevant because the lower class people, there was a lot of vegetables and a lot of cheese and a lot of bread. Very little meat. So,
So is it meat feast pizza when you get home?
But no, you can eat. I mean, we would eat very well, actually. I mean, you know, there's one great story, because we would often spit roast a chicken. Mm. And there is one great story, because we discovered that it was actually better to boil the chicken for a while in a cauldron before you put it on the spit.
Okay.
Because we would spit it and then find, you know, when we were cutting it, it wasn't cooked through.
Mm.
So this particular day, there was the cauldron was on the fire, boiling away. And they said to one of the young lads, "Oh, can you go check the chicken?" So he went, "There's no chicken." "What do you mean there's no chicken?" And they'd just been boiling water for a couple of hours, and they hadn't even bothered to put the chicken in.
Oops. So how do you get around things like that? With the salmonella, obviously, is a big.
Well, they just chucked it in and started it off, and they ate later.
Oh, Fair enough.
That's okay. As simple as that. Because you can't control a wood fire.
No.
So some days, if you've got a wood fire, you can get your meal cooked all in an hour. You know, if you're doing like a beef stew or something like that, you know, it'll cook really quickly. And then another day, if you get what's called English heritage safety wood.
Okay.
Because it doesn't burn.
Oh.
But no, it's what we all call, because when you go to a lot of places, they provide the firewood. And of course, if they just chop down something ready for, you know, a couple of hundred people to come, it's not seasoned. And of course, it's too wet and it never burns. So we just call it English Heritage Safety Wood. And obviously, if you're trying to cook on that, it can take you all day.
Yeah. It probably would have done in times gone by anyway.
Well, not necessarily, because like I say, you would have had regularly seasoned wood and you would have known that your wood was, you know, but you can only cook as well as your outdoor fire will let you.
Yeah. Fair enough. So when you go for a reenactment weekend, do you all stay over reenact overnight as well?
No.
Or do you all find the local
No, we all sort of like, yeah, it's called taking available. Your hat off. We say hats off. So once the public are gone, it's hats off.
Okay.
And then you can get out your bottle of wine, your can of beer, you know, you can have your fish and chips or, you know, whatever you want.
Yeah.
A lot of us still stay in costume, but we don't. I mean, there are immersive events where people will do it, but that's, you know, you decide to do that as a specific group of people, really.
And I suppose I'm thinking, when I've seen reenactments on the telly, obviously I'm thinking Midsummer Murders. I think there was one recently, or I've seen recently, where they'd reenacted and they were staying in the grounds of a country house or something. So they were sleeping in their makeshift.
We do sleep in the tents overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do stay on site and sleep in the tents.
Okay, but not in character.
Not in character, no.
Okay.
No.
Is there anything you'd like to tell me about it?
As a hobby, it is an amazing family event.
Yeah.
Especially if you join some of the big societies. And they will have babes in arms right the way through to, you know, all the way through 5-6 year olds through to teenagers. And, you know, these kids can scrub around in the mud all day and they learn fire safety. They learn how to whittle wood. They learn how to entertain themselves without their electronics. And also there is the thing that, you know, good old fashioned values of, well, actually, if you don't eat this, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Actually, no. But as a kind mother, you do actually have a supply of Jaffa cakes in the tent, but they have to go in the tent and eat them.
Okay. That's fair enough. I probably won't come out of the tent. No. How do the children get on? Do they, obviously they enjoy the dirty playing with no rules?
Well, they're just left. I mean, you know, you still, as a parent, you know, you have to be responsible and keep your eye on them and things. But they just play like kids, you know.
Yeah.
They'll just do whatever they do, as kids do: run around, climb trees, shout.
Yeah, just without the electronic games.
Without the electronics, yeah.
Which is never a bad thing, I feel. Bane of my life.
No, I don't mind electronics. I'm quite a techie person myself. And if it wasn't for the internet, I wouldn't know hardly any of the stuff that I do know. So, you know, and I often end up going down a rabbit hole because you'll think, oh, this and that. I remember once I was, I wanted to check out some nursery rhymes, you know, the history of some nursery rhymes, so I could maybe use them with the children, the public children. And so I was looking up all of the Orange and Lemons and Bells of St. Clements, and I was following the history of what each of the churches did and everything. And I came to one where it was saying about it was where the gateway to go to Tyburn, which was where they used to do the hangings. And then that took me through to all sorts of things about how hangings were done, and all about the long drop and the short drop and everything. And because Lincoln, they used to, the hangman at Lincoln was from Horncastle, and he's the chap who invented the long drop.
Oh. You learn something new every day.
Every day's a school day with a reenactment. You always learn something. And sometimes you do things that actually aren't reenactments. We do get asked to do sort of like children's entertainment things. And I was up on Hadrian's Wall at, I forget which fort it was, but it had a small Roman museum attached to it. And we'd asked to be dragon hunters. And basically it was over Easter holidays and to entertain the children, blah, 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 blah. And within the within the little museum, they had lots of acorn finials, stone carved finials, which from Roman times. And so as part of my chat to the children, I would say, and of course, we all know that the Romans worshipped dragons because look how many eggs they cast. And this woman, she said, really? I never knew that.
So you were misinforming people.
Well, I kind of like thought that they would know that I was misinforming them.
Okay, you obviously are much better at the storytelling than you know.
Because, let's face it, are dragons real?
Aren't they?
Well, you see, that's another thing. When in reenactments, if aeroplanes go over, they will be referred to as dragons.
Excellent. So you've got a story for everything.
That's right, yeah, we have.
And living in Lincolnshire, there's probably a lot of dragons flying about.
Yes, certainly where I live. Mm. Yes, right on the doorstep of Coningsby.
Excellent. When's your next reenactment taking place?
My next reenactment is the 12th of May at Cressin Temple Barns, and it's the Temple at War. So it's all mostly World War II military. I'll be going there as Mrs. MacArthur, Mary MacArthur, with Queen Mary. And we will be doing our little bit about the suffrage and et cetera, and Queen Mary's Sewing Guild. But the Royal West Kents will also be there, who were a World War One group, and Queen Mary will go and view the troops.
Inspect the parade.
Inspect the troops, yes.
And fabulous.
And I play her lady-in-waiting in that.
That sounds like it's going to be quite a spectacle.
Oh, they all are. They all are. The one that myself and Julia are most proud of is the Long Melford Convalescent Hospital, which we do at Kentwell Hall in Suffolk. And we have a matron, I play a Quames nurse. We have VADs there from the Red Cross. But we also have about 15 soldiers of various kinds, some in the hospital blues. Some officers were allowed to wear their own pyjamas and silk dressing gowns. They didn't have to wear the hospital blues ones. Then we have the walking wounded as well, which are in uniform, but they will have an armband on to say that, you know, that's why they're still not, you know, out at the front. Then we will have the medics and good ladies of the village who are doing their good deeds, bringing cake and things like that. And then we have the YMCA tent as well, who provides tea and cake for us. And that's going to be a very big event. That is quite a spectacle, that one.
So that's the 12th of May.
No, that one isn't. That's in first weekend of August.
Okay, so not for a little while
in
yet.
In Kentwell Hall, that one. Queen Mary and Mary MacArthur will be at Crescent Temple Barns on the 12th of May.
Okay. So whereabouts is Crescent Temple Barns?
Near Braintree in Essex.
Okay. So that's quite a distance then.
It is, yes, it is. But I used to live in Essex, so it was very local, because in fact it used to be about 10 miles from where I lived, so that was quite local.
Yeah.
My husband is going to be at Headingham Castle at the end of the month, doing a big Knights of the Round Table event there. So that, I'm not going to that one. We are going at the end of May, Castle Rising,
yeah.
Where we'll be playing the Mercenary Lanchnecks there for the weekend. And then, like I say, I've got the one in August. I'm only doing just the three this year. I've railed back on it. So as, because it just becomes too much when you're doing every weekend when you pack your whole house up in a car on a Friday afternoon, drive for a couple of hours, unpack it all, pitch this tent or an authentic tent, so it's poles and heavy canvas, and then you dress up in these ridiculous clothes and eat strange food, and then you pack it all down on a Sunday and go home and dump it all, and then go
back into Annie,
into the 21st century. But any and every reenactor's house is never tidy, ever, because you just don't have the time to tidy it.
No, like living two lives.
Yeah, and well, and you know, and there's things like a friend of ours passed away who used to play Cunning Will. He was the barber surgeon, and I inherited some of his bits and bobs. And so I think it's a goat's skull. Lovely. That hangs in the conservatory. And then there is a full harness of armour, and then there's, you know, helmets, and then there's just all sorts of odd things around in reenactors' houses.
I can imagine. I've never met anybody with a goat's head. Annie, you have been a history lesson to talk to. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure.